You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I got the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, May 14th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal but not metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, me and maybe you. Breaking format a little bit today. Got a couple stories I want to get to. Didn't have a chance last week. The number is 646-257-3920. We may take your calls if you call in the first half of the program. Today, Jamie Dimon, he gets a redo. He gets two interviews on Meet the Press. You get the first one before you're willing to admit that you've lost $2 billion, and then you get a second one when you need to do damage control. That's what you get when you're the CEO of a bank that gets free money from the U.S. government and then goes out and gambles it. Also, more explanation on exactly how it is bankers do what they do. Student loans. We'll talk about Tom Gable a little bit today, briefly. And latest on global warming, Occupy Wall Street actions this week in Chicago. And a really heartwarming story of a man who whitewashes a war of choice, the decision-making process of a war of choice, and then 8 years later is writing leadership parables and using that to sell books. Just fascinating. We're going to have Matt Taibbi on the program tomorrow, folks. Right now, I guess he's couldn't do the show today because he had to do MSNBC. They have a little more juice than we do because they have a slightly larger audience. They also seem to have more resources in terms of booking and sending cars for people and food in the green room. Not for me, not when I go there, but I can see that they did have food in the green room for the guests on Morning Joe or 30 Rock or whatever that show is, not 30 Rock, whatever the one that with Brian Williams tapes right there. As you can see, folks, my cold still lingering, so I'm not totally out of the woods yet. I blame my daughter, as I do for most things. I'm going to touch on the J.P. Morgan stuff briefly today, but again, Matt Taibbi on the program tomorrow, and still sorting out some of the stuff. There is some question as to whether or not it was essentially the bet that they were making was a hedge or simply just run-of-the-mill proprietary trading. It almost doesn't matter because in no circumstance do these people seem to be held accountable. But we'll dig into that a little bit more and a little bit more deeply in just moments. But let me take this opportunity to tell you that becoming a Majority Report member will allow me to do things like replace the 360 that I sold yesterday, Friday. So I'm sitting here. We've got some requests for in the better half of the program for some shout-outs. I won't be able to give you a shofar today, so hopefully wait till tomorrow. But we're liquidating some equipment here, stuff that isn't absolutely crucial to what we do. And hopefully I'm going to replace it with a used iPad. I've got the used iPad dock, but I don't have quite the used iPad yet. I'm without 360 today. Let's hope we don't have any technical difficulties. But it is your becoming a member that makes this show possible and will make it possible for this show to continue. We are 98% member supported. And so we need your membership. And regardless of whether you are interested in hearing the better half of the program, maybe just 40 minutes a day is all you need. But don't have it be one of those situations where you realize how much you counted on those 40 minutes a day when one day you wake up, it's just not there on your iTunes anymore. And you think that your iTunes has gone wacky. And then you take your computer down to your local store and you say, I don't understand what's going on here. And that guy at the local store says, you never bothered to become a member of this show, did you?
No. And that visit will certainly cost more than $10 a month.
Oh, of course. And then you'll have some type of computer repair guy shame you. You don't want that to happen, folks. So become a Majority Report member now at majority.fm. Colin Powell. You all remember him, right? He was the nice man who was the reasonable guy in the Bush administration, the one who said, if we need to go to war with Iraq, we really need to go to a war with Iraq. He doesn't walk around with talcum powder, folks, in little vials and then just whip it out at the United Nations. No, he brought that specifically that day to make a point. And that was, it was just a matter of time before we were all poisoned by a biological attack from Saddam Hussein. Don't let the smoking gun be a mushroom cloud or a cloud of biological agents. And, of course, this was the day that Tom Friedman and all the other establishment writers in this country, whether they were right or left, supposedly, said, wow, this is a slam dunk. When Colin Powell says we have to invade a country, we really do have to invade a country. Well, we've known for some time that he claims that he was lied to as well. Sort of. I mean, it's not totally clear. Back in around 2005, Lawrence Wilkerson, his chief of staff, started doing the rounds, painting a picture of a Colin Powell who trusted those around him to give him the proper information. At first, it seemed that it was Tenet was to blame, George Tenet, but then it sort of seemed like it wasn't. I mean, nobody's coming out and taking any responsibility for this. And now, Colin Powell has written a book. This is not the same of his biography, which, of course, he didn't do. But it is a book entitled, It Worked for Me in Life and Leadership. Yes, it did work for Colin Powell as he's writing books and touring around, giving speaking engagements. One of the revelations in his book, and this is going to come as a shock to all of you, and this is where I would need my sound effect board to say, surprise, surprise. But he also contends, contrary to what George Bush said. You remember, George Bush wrote a book. I think it was in crayon. I didn't get a chance to read it. Decision points. And, of course, one of those decision points was when we all gather around to talk about whether we should go after Iraq. And according to George Bush was really one of the guys who was really reluctant to attack Iraq. Because I didn't want to use force. Well, Colin Powell sneaks into his leadership parable book that there was never a decision point. It just seemed a foregone conclusion that the National Security Council never even met to discuss invading Iraq. And we've heard the same thing from Condi Rice and George Tenet, that there was never a debate about whether or not they were going into Iraq. It was more or less just how are we going to do it. And so that's there. But what we're seeing now is just, you know, one more attempt to sort of whitewash one of these players' role in this debacle. Powell briefly touches on how he came to provide that false and misleading information that he was forced to pass on at the United Nations. And, of course, he blames Dick Cheney. And Scooter Libby in particular, who wrote a memo. Scooter is the sort of the easy whipping boy in that administration. But, of course, they were all at fault. There was plenty of evidence that Curveball, who recently came out, said, yeah, oh, yeah, I lied about all of it, was a source not to be trusted because the Clinton administration and under the Clinton administration, the CIA had rejected this guy's story literally maybe a half a dozen times, documented times. This guy's a nut job. This guy's got his own agenda. And it wasn't until Cheney et al. Requested 22 briefings from the CIA when I think number 22 was the one where they got what they wanted. And Powell, in his book, gives himself credit for rejecting some of the lies that Cheney wanted to use. He acknowledges in the book, according to Dan Frumkin, who apparently got an advanced copy, that, quote, one of my most momentous failures, the one with the widest ranging impact, was his speech at the UN. But he also concludes that every senior U.S. official would have made the exact same case. So in other words, this was a massive screw up, but I cannot be blamed for it because anyone would have made that same massive screw up. And then he says the lesson of all this is, quote, always try to get over failure quickly. Learn from it. Study how you contribute to it. And if you're responsible for it, own up to it. He writes in a book 10 years later. A book, incidentally, that's just about leadership parables. If you're the CEO of a company, let's say. Where ostensibly, I guess, if your screw up is really big, you lose a lot of money for your shareholders. In this case, Powell screw up, well over 100,000 civilians dead, nearly 5,000 U.S. military personnel dead, tens of thousands in some way injured, probably with lifelong scars, whether they're physical or emotional. Millions upon millions of Iraqis, either in exile or internally displaced. But what are you going to do? Learn from your mistakes and try not to make them again. And the best line in this piece by Dan Frumkin, and for a long time I thought Wilkerson was being sent out there to whitewash for Powell. And the only thing Wilkerson will say, what do you make of his conclusory lesson, the one about I've just got to move on, acknowledge your mistakes to yourself, and then move on and know you're going to get a big payday. Wilkerson says, quote, Powell's rules are for everyone else. That's what makes it such a must read. Unbelievable. Not an ounce of accountability. And I want to remind you, Colin Powell You'll recall, as he was holding up that vial of powder, and he was showing you pictures of essentially an ice cream truck that some would call an ice cream truck. Other people would say, hey, that's a mobile biological weapons lab. It was actually closer to ice cream truck. But he read off intercepts that U.S. listening devices. Remember, the U.S. supposedly had a long list of storage facilities and labs that were developing all of this incredible biological agents that were going to take us out. Remember, it takes like a ton of ricin to kill like 100 men on a battlefield. But nevertheless, we had this long list. And you'll remember that when Colin Powell was in front of the United Nations, he was holding up this vial. There were hundreds of UN weapons inspectors in country saying to the CIA, hey, where's that list? Because we can't find anything. Do you have a double top secret list? Because the list that you sent us, there's nothing there. And Powell read off intercepts between Iraqi commanders and Iraqis at these different locations. And the intercepts, as Powell read them, seemed to suggest that these Iraqis were hiding things. But in fact, and Powell surely knew because he changed the wording and the emphasis and left certain things out in his retelling of this, all they were doing was, you guys better certify. The commanders are saying, you better certify to us that there's no weapons of mass destruction there, that there's nothing that could be considered weapons of mass destruction. You better look around your base and make sure nobody's got anything. And if they don't, you better tell us. Because we keep telling the Americans we don't have it at this point. So you better certify. Which is exactly what you would do if you were trying to prove that you don't have any. But that's, of course, not the way it was presented to us. We were led into a war of choice. And you know who's been held accountable for that? Nobody. But what are you going to do? You know, as Colin Powell says, you know, realize you made your mistakes. Own up to them. But also say that anybody else would have made the exact same mistake. So you're not really owning up to it. It's not really a mistake, is it? I mean, if every single other person would do that, then it's not really a mistake. It's just your job. And then go on to make a lot of money. And hopefully clean up your reputation so that you still get written about well in the history books. It really is disgusting. But, you know, we got to turn the page, folks. We've got to turn the page. Please, everyone, turn the page now. And when we turn that page, we find, oh, we're still a country that provides absolutely no accountability for those at the highest reaches. So Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, the guy who was so was strutting like a peacock because, you know, his bank, even though they got a hefty amount of bailout money in the form of zero cost loans, was not heavily exposed in the financial crisis, and he has been one of the strongest advocates for a weak Volcker rule, if there's going to be any Volcker rule. And you remember, we were talking about this with Alexis Goldstein from Occupy the SEC the other day. And she was part of writing a 300-some-odd page comment letter on the Volcker rule as regulators are beginning to essentially take the overall umbrella of the Volcker rule, which basically says, you cannot engage in proprietary trading with money that is federally insured. In other words, you cannot trade on behalf of yourself. We can trade our clients' monies. That's fine. That's what they ask us to do. But you cannot trade your own money that's in your institution because, in fact, that's your depositors' money. Because investment banks and banks now are co-joined since the fall of Glass-Steagall. And you cannot use federally insured money to make these type of trades. And of course, this money is, there's no, they don't mark each bill that comes in. Like, this is federally insured money. We're just going to keep that pile over there. And so the SEC is trying to drill down and actually make the rules that will be, that will manifest the Volcker Rule. And, of course, Jamie Dimon and his lieutenants have been all over Washington trying to make sure that that thing looks like Swiss cheese. And so they're not subject to any of these rules now. But so he does a Jamie Dimon, and we're going to talk more about this with Taibbi tomorrow. So I'm not going to do too much of this. But so Jamie Dimon tapes an interview with David Gregory on Wednesday for Meet the Press. Surely Jamie Dimon knew about the losses. Supposedly, according to disclosure rules, he couldn't tell anybody. And but he could have canceled the interview, right? But no. He goes in an interview probably hoping, like, maybe there's a way we can get around ever disclosing this. He tapes an interview. Now, how fun would it have been for Meet the Press to tape an interview on Wednesday and actually run it to show just sort of the BS that Jamie Dimon is shoveling out? But no, you're not going to do that because you're going to lose access to a whole raft of CEOs and the important people. So have him back on after he announces his massive loss so they can have a redo. A mulligan. That's what you do, folks. You give them a mulligan because that's what gentlemen do for each other. Unbelievable. JP Morgan announces a raft of firings. You got to feel bad for these guys and gals. Ina Drew. She is a banker who has worked for J.P. Morgan for 3 decades. And she has resigned in the wake of this. You got to feel bad for her. She was, she made almost $16 million last year. And so, you know, to go from $16 million down to zero money, except for I'm sure she got a huge buyout, that's going to be tough. You're going to have to cut back on one of the fur sinks that you're going to put into your $50 million home in the Hamptons. That's going to really cut into it. A bunch of other, like 3 or 4, I think, Achilles Marcus, who was the big whale trader in London, and trader Javier Martin Artajo will also resign. But what this shows, obviously, is that we need regulation on these big banks. They cannot be trusted to manage their own risk. Because when they're this big, we, of course, as a government, implicitly backstop them because we're afraid of what their failure will do to the rest of the economy. And we'll talk more with Taibbi about this tomorrow because there's some question as to whether or not it was a hedge, which would mean that it was subject to some rules but not others under the Dodd-Frank and Volcker regulations. None of which, of course, have already gone into effect. So we're talking hypothetically either way. But one of the problems with this is that when you start to have these small bore rules, as opposed to Glass-Steagall, which would have just put up a firewall, invariably these bankers are going to chip away at it or plug massive holes in it. And so you've got Jamie Dimon. Let's listen to Jamie Dimon in the, I think it's the second, you know, he got a couple of, like I say, this is his Mulligan interview on Meet the Press from Sunday. The Mulligan one, not the first one. Here it is.
The immediate question, the SEC is looking into this. Did the bank break any laws? Did it violate any accounting rules or SEC rules?
So we've had audit, legal, risk, compliance, and we're best people looking at all of that. We know we were sloppy. We know we were stupid. We know there was bad judgment. We don't know if any of that's true yet. Of course, regulators should look at something like this. That's their job. So, you know, we are totally open kimono with regulators, and they will come to their own conclusions. But we intend to fix it, learn from it, and be a better company when it's done.
Hey, it sounds like he's been reading Colin Powell's leadership rules. We're going to learn from our mistakes, own up to them, realize that it could have happened to anybody, and just move on. So we have another opportunity to do it. And of course, you know, the idea that we may have broken some laws, that's what he's hoping for. He's hoping for the idea that we broke some laws. People will find out that we broke some laws. We'll pay a small fine. We will fire those people involved. And we certainly don't need any further regulation because the regulation covered it. We just didn't follow it. So we were sloppy. We made a mistake. People are human. People are human. But many of these people on Wall Street are human, but also a particular type of human. There was an interesting story and in the New York Times magazine this weekend about kids who have been determined to be psychopaths and how difficult it is to treat them. In fact, how difficult it is to treat any psychopaths. From the New York Times piece, there was, it talks about some of the traits that are manifested in kids who may be psychopaths. There was one kid, apparently, who was using a knife to cut off small portions of the cat's, the family cat's tail. And he would cut off just a little segment each week so that the family didn't really notice what was going on until the cat's tail just became significantly shorter over a couple of weeks. And apparently the boy was happy. He was proud of what he was doing because he was like, according to the psychologist who talked to him, he said, I want to be a scientist, and I was experimenting. I wanted to see how the cat would react. And there was another story of like a, I think like a 9-year-old boy who, I don't know if it was in this piece, I can't remember, or I just heard it before, was where he basically pushed a toddler into a pool and watched the kid drown because he wanted to see what it would look like for a kid to drown. And apparently the problem is, and this is sort of a hardwired, they're saying, a psychological or developmental disorder. The problem is that if you try and teach a psychopath about empathy, the only thing you do is essentially make a more functional psychopath. Because what psychopaths do is that they can't feel empathy for other people. But what they can do is feign empathy. They know how society expects them to act, and so they act that way and hide the fact that they're a psychopath. It just makes them better manipulators of other people because they know what emotions these people should be feeling and probably are feeling, and they just don't care. But they know if they project that they do, or they project something relative to that, they can manipulate these people. And perhaps it was a coincidence, but in the, I think it was the Saturday NY Times, William Dershowitz, I can't pronounce his last name, who is a who's author of a Jane Austen education, talks about capitalism and psychopaths. And he cites that study, which has found that 10% of people who work on Wall Street are clinical psychopaths. The proportion of people at large who are psychopaths is closer to 1%. So there are 10 times more psychopaths on Wall Street than one finds in the general population. And we also know that the rich have a propensity to lie and cheat more than others. But he writes that to expect morality in the stock markets is a category error. In other words, that's, you don't even apply that notion to the markets. Because capitalism requires, to perform it successfully, requires a complete disregard for morality, because morality is based upon the notion of considering others. You know, it's not even like a notion of honor or anything like this. It's simply, if I'm going to be a successful capitalist, there may be times where my interests intersect with the interests of others. Great. There may be times where my interests don't intersect with the others. Doesn't matter. Nothing that I'm doing is measured by that. And so this is what we have. And so when you have a guy like Jamie Dimon who goes on and says, yeah, no, I believe me. Yes, we may have been stupid. I mean, he's just reading, of course, what his crisis management team has told him to say. Make sure you show. And that's all crisis management is, right? It's just simply like we facilitate psychopaths. We're going to tell you what people expect to hear in terms of empathy. Then you're going to say it, and the people watching this, you know, Meet the Press in this instance is just basically an advertisement. Just instead of having to go on and buy 15 minutes of network time, we're going to get it for free. And you go on and you basically do, you know, I'm surprised he wasn't allowed to bring on like a colored brochure. Like, look at all the things that we enable society to do. And you're going to go on and you're going to say we're stupid and we made a mistake and heads will roll. And we definitely want the regulators to come in and check this out. Oh, yes. Maybe they should have the New York Fed supposedly regulates the banking activities of these banks to come in. And I would imagine Jamie Dimon could get the New York Fed to come in there and send a lot of people down because he sits on the board of the New York Fed. And so he should definitely know some regulators there. Just next time you're at the board of the Fed meetings, just make sure you say, hey, guys, don't forget, I want a bunch of regulators to come in and investigate me. When people talk about the Fed and whatnot being problematic, this is the most problematic part about it. It's not even the foxes guarding the hen house. It is the foxes live in the hen house. There are a few hens there. The hens just work for the foxes in this instance. I don't even know what the metaphor is for this, actually. But there have been numerous calls for Jamie Dimon to step down from the New York Board of Directors, New York Fed's Board of Directors, Elliot Spitzer, Elizabeth Warren, and I'm sure what they'll do is just put his VP on there. Put his personal secretary. So that he actually just doesn't have to go to these meetings. It'd actually be a time-saving step. And just in case you wanted to see how the right wing, at a moment when there couldn't be a better example, really, the timing of it couldn't be better, of when you needed to have greater regulation on these banks. Just to give you a sense of how the right wing is responding to this, because, of course, they don't want greater regulation on banks. We already see the Republicans in the House trying to defund the financial fraud task force as if it wasn't already anemic enough. Now they want to make sure there's no money on it at all. And so when you want to know how the right wing is going to try and respond to something, if you want to see how the real right-wing idiots do it, you, of course, watch Fox and Friends on Friday. And here is Steve Doocy talking to Stuart Varney. Stuart Varney is, of course, from Fox Business Channel. And he is a hack, but at least he's not an idiot, because he realizes, I mean, Steve Doocy's so stupid. He can't even get his talking points straight. Listen to this, where Stuart Varney has to basically shut him down and just say, you know, you idiot, you're suggesting more regulation in this instance. He does it a little more polite than one might expect, but here it is.
Lost a ton of money very quickly.
But let me make this observation, Stuart, and that is, you know,
all right, stop it for a second. So you see, Varney has said, he's just talked about the J.P. Morgan Chase. They've lost a ton of money, and this is bad. This is bad. Not so bad that we need regulation, but you know, remember, this is the private industry. Government doesn't get involved in the private industry. And Steve Doocy's like, but wait a second, I've got a mandate here.
And this administration so many times has blamed the Bush administration. You know, they had all those rules during the Bush administration. This happened in the last 6 months. This happened on the president's watch. This happened while his SEC was in charge. I don't know that he's going to be very effective at demonizing.
I don't think that the president's going to take any blame. There'll be no blame pointed at him because of what happened at J.P. Morgan Chase.
I know, but if he's the president, he's the president of the banks, too.
No, actually, he's not.
You know what I mean.
Look, stop.
The best part is when Doocy goes, well, but you know what I mean. I mean, Varney's still talking, but if he's the president of the country, he's the president of the banks. And, of course, this is the last thing that a guy like Varney wants, because that justifies more regulation. I mean, Steve Doocy doesn't realize he's arguing for more regulation. And Varney's like, no. And then you can hear Doocy in the most childlike, idiot voice. But you know what I mean. Varney's just talking over him, and Doocy's having to say that. But you know what I mean. In other words, I'm supposed to come up with something to crap on Obama, and you know, because it's what I'm here for. And can you come up with something? You know what I mean. Obama bad. He's black. You know what I mean. You know what I mean. Oh, that is fantastic. That is just fantastic. All right, folks. Coming up in the better half of the program, your phone calls at 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. Your IMs. Good story on student loans. And also, that dude from that Facebook movie. The Brazilian, or the guy who used to be from Brazil and then became an American citizen.
Well, he's a real life person. He was in what? He wasn't in the like. He's not in the movie.
What?
You what?
There's really a no. That dude in the movie, who had to sue to get part of Facebook.
Yeah, the actual guy, not the guy.
Wait, that was a true story?
And I was making a joke. You know what I mean. You know what I mean. He's the president of all America and Facebook. Well, that dude, nothing like moving to a country so that you can be safe, have the opportunity to make billions, and then skedaddling when you have to pay taxes on it. Giving up your citizenship, we'll talk about that later in the program. I'll try and keep the irony down to a minimum. And, of course, great news if you are not a white male. In fact, if you're a Hispanic or a black male in this city, you're getting so much attention from the New York Police Department. It's wonderful. And, of course, but Peter King, of course, the congressional representative from the former supporter of the terrorist organization, the IRA, contends that, that's not going on anywhere where he can see it. We'll talk about that in the better half of the program. Also, Americans elect looking more and more shaky. And what is going on with Ron Paul? Where has he been? Apparently just having his delegates being beat up by the Republicans at conventions. We'll see. All that and more. Folks, you can reach me at 646-257-3920. I am me at Majority FM on your IM machine. And we'll head into the better half of the program. Remember, justcoffee.coop. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get a 10% off. Fair trade. Coffee, tea, chocolate, organic if you want it. Los Diosos is my favorite. But bike fuel used to be my favorite. It changes. Do we have a Majority Report branded? It's coming. Not quite there. Getting the labels printed as we speak. Also, don't forget, you can if you buy crap on Amazon, you can buy it through our link at majority.fm, support the show. We get a little kickback on that. It's not going to pay for my daughter's college education because I'm not going to send her to college. Because you know how the right wing is telling us now. It's not important. Dollar for dollar, you're not going to get a payback on it. Forget about that whole notion about how there's some value in having an educated populace. Let's just let the rich kids go to college, folks. That's the point. Let me put it this way. If you have to ask how much college is going to cost, you don't deserve to go. You got to ask, not for you. Also, of course, we have Majority Report merchandise. DonateYourAccount.com. You can go help spread the word about this program. Give us a review on iTunes. Are you that lazy? Next time you open up your computer, you can't just go give us a 5-star rating on iTunes? You don't even have to say much. Just say, good show, 5 stars, bam. You can even write, good show, period. Do I got to say anything else? Or you can say, like, look at my stars. Do I need to say anything?
You should type out, good show, 5 stars. Bam.
Yeah.
Write that out.
I will be on Radigan this afternoon. Who knows what? I know Carney had his mic turned off on the Tamron Hall show. Well, we'll talk about them in the better half. All right. See you in the better half, folks.